Econ Insights podcast. Stay up to date with the latest trends in education and training from the leaders in perinatal nursing education. Here's your host, Sophia Navard.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to A1 Insights. I'm your host, Sophia Navard, and today's show is titled The Impact of Implicit Bias in Healthcare. We'll start today's discussion with a few facts. According to the CDC, long-standing systemic health and social inequities have put some members of racial and ethnic minority groups at increased risk of getting COVID-19 or experiencing severe illness, regardless of age. This information aligns with the research conducted by the American Public Media, APM, Research Lab, which has found that Black Americans continue to experience the highest overall COVID-19 mortality rates, at a staggering 69.7 deaths per 100,000, followed by Indigenous Americans and Pacific Islanders. These alarming rates can be attributed to multiple factors, including pre-existing health conditions, limited access to resources, racism and implicit bias, stigma, and systemic inequities within the field of healthcare. In an effort to dig deeper into the impact of implicit bias in healthcare, we are joined by Dr. Joya Kerr-Perry, President and founder of the National Birth Equity Collaborative, and Dr. Shawana Moore, A1 member, an assistant professor, program director, and practitioner at Thomas Jefferson University. Welcome, Dr. Kerr-Perry and Dr. Moore.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
You're most welcome. Now let's start with Dr. Kerr-Perry. Tell us a bit about yourself and your clinical background.
Sure. So I am an OBGYN. I went to medical school at Louisiana State University and did residency in obstetrics and gynecology at Tulane School of Medicine in New Orleans. And I practiced OBGYN in New Orleans up until Hurricane Katrina, when I became the city maternal and child health director and then the director of clinical services. So I cared for patients who were majority Medicaid in a high volume urban setting.
Thank you. And Dr. Moore, tell us a bit about yourself and your clinical background.
Sure. So I am a women's health nurse practitioner. I've been practicing close to 10 years now, mainly within underserved populations at a federally qualified health center in New Jersey. I also am an assistant professor at Thomas Jefferson University in Philadelphia, where I direct the women's health gender-related nurse practitioner program. I still maintain clinical practice 2 days a week. I'm caring specifically for women's health population. Some of my research interests include diversity, equity, and inclusion, telehealth within a women's health setting, care for underserved populations. I completed all of my nursing education at Thomas Jefferson University in Philadelphia.
Awesome. Thank you. So now let's get started, shall we? Dr. Kerr-Perry, how do you define implicit bias?
Well, implicit bias manifests in expectations or assumptions about physical or social characteristics that are dictated by stereotypes that are based on a person's race, gender, age, or ethnicity. People who intend to be fair and believe they are egalitarian apply these biases unintentionally. Some behaviors that result from implicit bias manifest in actions, and others manifest by absence of action. And that's really the opposite, or in contrast to what we also know happens, which is explicit bias. And those things are accessible, and you know and you're aware that you're doing them. And so both things can cause harm in the healthcare field.
Thank you. And Dr. Moore, knowing this definition, how does implicit bias contribute to the rate of maternal mortality and morbidity?
We know that data shows that African-American women, Indigenous Americans, and Alaska Natives do experience higher rates of maternal mortality and morbidity when compared to white women. And this has a lot to do with implicit bias on the part of healthcare providers. Some of the exact statistical numbers show that Black women have a 3.3 higher chance of experiencing maternal mortality. Indigenous American women and Alaska Natives have a 2.5 higher chance of experiencing maternal mortality and morbidity when compared to their white counterparts. There are also a lot of studies out there that show that healthcare professionals rate the pain of Black women lower than that of white women. There's also was a study done in New York that showed that Black educated women who gave birth in local hospitals actually suffer from a higher rate of life-threatening complications when compared to non-Black women with less education.
Thank you, Dr. Moore. And Dr. Kripari, how has COVID-19 exacerbated implicit bias or disrespectful care?
Well, we know if we've been following the media during this pandemic, during this crisis around COVID-19, we've seen examples of Black birthing people who've died in childbirth. And when you follow the through line for those examples, you'll see this continuation of ignoring the symptoms that Black birthing people present with, and also having lack of access to the proper treatments and facilities. We know that prior to COVID-19, when Black birthing people would present with, say, symptoms of chest pain, they were less likely to be evaluated for a heart attack or for having symptoms of perhaps enlarged heart or blood pressure elevations because their pain was not believed. So now you add in lack of access because facilities are closed, needed to be closed because of the pandemic, but they are closed. And so when they're counting on the judgment of the providers as to who needs to be seen in person, having to use telephonic visits instead of in-person visits. And so all the quick responses that we have in our heads and the assumptions around who we see as already having high blood pressure all the time, so we're not as worried when the patient comes in with a 140 over 90 because we assume that Black patients always have a 140 over 90 and then that patient ends up in the ICU or sadly having symptoms of COVID, shortness of breath, or similar to symptoms of pregnancy. And so we see those biases leading to lack of diagnosis and treatment and adequate follow-up. And so although we do not have data yet, because we always lag behind in collection of data, especially when it comes to women's health and maternal health, we do know from stories and from anecdotally that there has been an increase, and we know that it was going to happen, that there was going to be an increase in people who are not seen as frequently as they should have been seen, and that our devaluation of certain groups of people allow for them not to have the care that they deserve.
Thank you. And Dr. Moore, how do you recognize unconscious bias behaviors?
Well, I think the biggest thing with recognizing unconscious or an implicit bias behavior, it starts from an individual perspective and standpoint. I think as individuals, we have to take ownership and our own self-awareness to understand that we all come with our own unconscious and implicit biases. That's not something that is not familiar to all people. It doesn't make it bad or good. It's just something that we all have. But it's important to be able to have an awareness of what those unconscious biases are so you can recognize them and try to mitigate them. The other thing is really understand that biases are natural. We all have them. The other thing is really being able to have discussions with people that may not look like us, that may have their different belief systems than us. And then finally, I would recommend being able to be a part of facilitated discussions and training sessions that help promote biases literacy. I know at Jefferson recently there was a program developed around having brave conversations. It's led by our new vice provost for diversity, equity, and inclusion at the Enterprise. And it's held so individuals can be able to have discussions around implicit bias, around racism among their colleagues and peers, and it's guided by an expert within the field of diversity, equity, and inclusion.
Yeah, and I just want to add that it is very true that we all have biases, but those biases come from both the inaccurate information and the untruths, or I like to say the fake news we were taught in school, that race is a biological construct. I know that when I was in medical school in the late 1990s, which in my mind is not that long ago, my embryology professor taught us that there were three races, mongoloid, caucasoid, and negroid. So although the bias is real and it still exists, it came from both our education and and the lack of information around the fact that race is a social and political construct, that the reason we have differences in outcomes based upon skin color is because we believe, and we have been teaching for hundreds of years, that there is a biological difference based upon skin color. So now that we've completed the entire Human Genome Project and we know that that was not true, we have to both have honest conversations around the fact that there is no biological basis of race. So when we create policies and practices and belief systems that devalue people based upon race or ethnicity or religion or gender or class, that those beliefs and those policies create outcomes that are harmful to people who you devalue. So in order for us to really undo our bias, our first job is to undo and unlearn the information that was inaccurate in the first place and based upon a hierarchy of human value, a belief in that has been inaccurate for about 500 years.
Thank you both. In an effort to better recognize unconscious bias behaviors in the clinical setting, can you provide our listeners with some examples or scenarios that you've encountered?
Sure. So I'm going to speak from my own experience as a Black woman within a healthcare system when I carried my son. So as a woman self nurse practitioner, I have knowledge base in terms of pregnancy and complications that can occur during pregnancy. During my prenatal visits, I knew that the weight gain that I was experiencing didn't have anything to do with weight, but more so was fluid. My mother had a history of preeclampsia, so I was concerned that potentially I was going down that same route. When I brought up my concerns to my healthcare providers, who did not look like me, so they were white, my experience from my healthcare providers were they didn't listen to my voice. They didn't hear what I was saying. They kind of brushed it off as, oh, you'll be fine, and kind of gave me like homeopathic things to do, but I knew that something wasn't right. So a long story short, I ended up being diagnosed with severe preeclampsia, and it was a blessing that I actually had a 38-week appointment, and that's when they finally called it. But I think it was because during that visit, I told them, I said, something's not right. I'm not well. And it was finally at that point that my healthcare provider said, yes, something's not right. You have a lot of protein in your urine. You had an 11-pound weight gain within 1 week, and your blood pressure is through the roof. And I'm like, I knew that all along. I knew for a while that this was the route that I was going. And I would say during my time in the hospital after delivering my son, the nurses, they were phenomenal for the most part. But there was this one instance where I broke out into a sweat. I think my blood pressure just dropped. The bells and whistles were going off in the room, and no one ran to my room. My husband looked at me and said, you don't look good. You're sweating. Is anybody coming? And I don't even remember my response. But I remember finally a nurse came in, and she said, nobody's come in. Let me elevate your feet. I think your blood pressure's dropping. And I felt that if I looked differently, maybe people would have came sooner to check on me. It was a real blessing that one of my students who had graduated actually worked on that unit. And it was through her advocacy, I feel as though, as a white woman, to speak to the other nurses and healthcare providers on the unit, to tell them about my background, that I was a doctoral prepared nurse and that I was a professor at a university. I don't think until she had that conversation that people treated me differently and my care was different. So even from my own personal perspective, I've experienced implicit bias within the healthcare system. And I know that I could have had probably very different outcomes and different experiences if my voice was validated and heard. But I'm just thankful that I had somebody there to advocate for me, because things could have probably turned out much differently.
Well, thank you so much for sharing that, Dr. Moore. I really appreciate that. And I think what we're learning is that although we feel like all those individual experiences like yours are isolated, or we'll say things like, I feel like, or I think, now we have data to support that what you feel and what you were thinking is true for many, many people, that the evidence shows us, the data shows us that people who look like you and me, when they go to the hospital, they are less likely to be heard. When the bells and whistles go off, they're less likely to be evaluated. And so we can no longer act as if this is individual bad apples or people who are just don't know better and making bad choices. We have a structural and systemic problem inside of our healthcare system that devalues Black people, devalues Black birthing people, and doesn't come to their aid at the time that they need it. And so we have to structurally change that. It can't be just individual behavior anymore, and this belief that it's only a few people.
Absolutely. I agree completely.
I'll just add to that that I didn't give you an example of how bias shows up and how it's harmful in our health. And one of the ways is that when we think about when patients come in and they would like an epidural, we have data from UNC, from Dr. Jasmine Johnson, that shows that pain relief for Black patients is not given at the same rate as pain relief for white patients. And so although when I think I've seen some of my colleagues say, well, I wasn't taught that pain was different for Black and white people, and I don't know who would say that. You might not have been taught it in a lecture. It might not have been on a slide that explicitly said Black patients have a higher pain tolerance than white patients, although there are some textbooks that still list that. But that if even if it wasn't explicitly stated in a class, that we have data to support that people still believe what was taught to them before, that Black patients have a higher pain tolerance. And so therefore, if Black patients are not screaming and yelling and asking for an epidural or asking for pain relief, they're less likely to get their pain relieved in a timely manner, and then they're more likely to have complications from not having pain treated. So the ways that we can show up and we can recognize that that although we might have great intentions to treat all of our patients the same, that we weren't set up to be able to do that. We weren't set up and taught to be able to practice in order to treat patients the same, because we were set up to treat patients that believe that Black patients and brown patients and low-income patients were broken, and that we were there to just try to patch them up, versus that they come with a strength and a power and a resiliency, and our job is to see them as strong and powerful and to build with them and to see that their pain is just as real and as valuable as everyone else's pain, and their needs and their blood pressure and hemorrhage, all those things need to be treated and evaluated. And we have to look at our own our systems to ensure that they're met, that their needs are met.
Thank you both. So you've defined implicit bias for us and outlined the ways in which it contributes to the rates of maternal mortality and morbidity, and you've given us examples of implicit bias in the healthcare setting. So as we come to a close, how can one make an effort to avoid acting out on negative feelings and stereotypes?
I would say I think it has to be an intentional effort by the individual. I think that it's important for individuals to recognize that through our experiences that we do have implicit bias and unconscious bias. There are various assessments out there that can be completed through professional organizations or experts trained in diversity, equity, and inclusion that can help us recognize what biases we have and how to mitigate those. The other thing I do recommend is that from an institution or organization perspective, that it has to be an intention to have ongoing training for individuals on implicit bias, as well as other topics related to health disparities and racial disparities that impact healthcare and specifically the healthcare of women. And I think the biggest thing is we know that minorities do suffer from greater impacts of implicit bias. So it's our job and our duty to make sure we recognize and mitigate our own biases so that we can help contribute to better health outcomes for minority women and underserved populations.
I just hope that at the end of this pandemic, at the end of COVID-19, this moment where both nurses and patients and physicians and all of us are all feeling not valued, not getting the supplies that we need, not getting the resources that we need, expected to show up and participate in an economy without having the things that keep us safe, that we will come out on the other side with the belief that we're all in this together, and it's not the patients versus the provider or the nurses versus the doctors, but really all of us have been under-resourced, undervalued, and health is a right, and we deserve to have the things to live and thrive as a healthy community.
All right. Thank you. Well, Dr. Kripari and Dr. Moore, I thank you again for all that you do, and most importantly, thank you for stepping away from your work and taking the time to share your insights with us today.
Thank you again for having us.
Thanks for having us.
You're welcome. And to all of our listeners, please note that this information is not intended to replace the guidelines that have been set by the CDC or a consultation with your provider. You may also visit our website at awan.org and click on the red COVID-19 banner for additional resources. As always, if you're having an emergency, please dial 911. Until we meet again, remember that we're all stronger together. This has been Sophia Navard for A1 Insights.